Welcome to another episode of Gully Cricket to Bounce Wicket podcast. I'm your host Srinivas and I'm joined by Raja from Hyderabad today and Manoj from Bangalore as always. And we are going to talk about Tokyo Olympics on this special episode. And we are joined by our friend Mr. Ram as well. Welcome back to the show, Ram.
Yeah, hi. Welcome. It's nice to be here, Srini. Thanks for inviting me.
And today we are going to be joined by a special guest who is going to help us understand India's position going into Olympics. She earlier worked as correspondent and senior correspondent in Vijay Times and Deccan Chronicle, respectively, and working as assistant editor at Times of India, Bangalore now. Welcome to the show, Manuja. Thank you for accepting our invitation.
Thank you. And very nice to be talking to you guys.
So before we get into show, I know you, myself and Ram are big fans of Federer. So have you guys recovered from the 6-0 loss in the final set?
It's still hurting, Srini. It's still hurting. I had actually put out a tweet on this one. I told that after the Pujara fiasco of 2019 semifinals, where I was not able to sleep for the whole day, the Ranji Trophy semifinals of 2019, that was the day when Federer lost, especially that 6-0 in third set. I was not able to sleep for the whole day. I mean, it was terrible. I just hope it doesn't end up being his last Grand Slam. I somehow had a glimmer of hope he might be coming back. That's what his body language suggested. That let's hope.
Yeah, I can't wait to see him back on court. And like I always say, there is one more Wimbledon left in him. I mean, but that's of course the fan speaking, not the journalist.
Yeah.
One more Olympics. Yeah. One more Wimbledon.
Yeah, I think even all these Grand Slam organizers will also look for that, right? Because they'll get their own publicity and viewership if Federer is playing for obvious reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the kind of fan following he has, if you look at any other athlete, you have those diehard Nadal fans, you have those diehard Djokovic fans. But with Federer, he's more like a mass hero.
Right. So, Manoja, tell us, how was your past few weeks, especially considering a lot of qualifications being finalized for Olympics and, probably working from home quite some time. So, how was your past few weeks?
Yeah, it's been very tough because one thing, a lot of people, especially in India, say, example, our swimmers left the qualification to the end. Like we had Sajan Prakash who qualified in the last event and Srihari qualified through the trials, which was again a special exemption trials that was given for him. Of course, great that both of them made the A cut. But like I was telling them, I said, guys, don't leave it to the end. So it gives them like about roughly 3 to 4 weeks to actually get ready for the event. But, it's been very different in terms of the usual course of preparing for an Olympics. So even if we don't go for the Olympics, as journalists, most of us who work in national newspapers, what happens is we come together as a central desk. So all the multidiscipline journalists are drawn into a pool. And we are based out of either Bombay or Delhi during the course of the Olympics or a World Cup, a football World Cup or a cricket World Cup. Now, we're actually getting used to the fact that, this time we're going to be having a remote, we call that a special desk. So we'll be remotely operating a special desk as well. And even if you look at the qualifications that's been happening right now, some of the athletes like the walkers, they're going through some fitness tests.
Okay.
I mean, you're saying your team is leaving on leaving next week. You actually don't have clarity on what your team is.
Right. So speaking of qualifications and all, I'm sure you must be knowing a lot of players preparing for it for some time. And are there any players who are like who failed to qualify and deserves to be there on the list?
For me, in hockey, I would say S.B. Sunil from Karnataka. I'm not saying that because he's from Karnataka. Akash Deep as well. These were two players I really thought deserved to go into the Olympics. Not because of any emotions attached to it, but for the sheer experience they bring into the team and the fact that they're big match players. Did they lack in fitness? No. Did they lack in game plan? No. Obviously, the coach had reasons to give in terms of climate, weather and all of that. But you're going in hockey, for example, once in 4 years, we all wake up to Indian hockey. But to think that you're going into Olympics with a forward line which is so raw. I mean, to be honest, I don't know who your playmaker is going to be, who's the one who's going to be connecting the ball from the midfield to the striking circle, because this is what these two boys did. Barring a Mandeep Singh, you don't have an experienced forward line. And, you know, somehow I feel in India, we need to treat our athletes better. Especially in these times, Sunil and Akashdeep, Ramandeep, any of those boys who have been dropped, senior players who were dropped, I think you should have narrowed down your pool before this. It's not easy. For example, I'll give you a classic case of Sunil because it's closer home for me. He has a 2-year-old daughter who he must have seen like thrice in the pandemic. It's not easy on them, for any athlete. You know, you're living in a camp for 16 months before, you know, knowing that you're not going to the Olympics. What happens to that sacrifice? I mean, it holds true for everybody. But how were they told? One fine day, you're told you're not in the team. So I thought, you know, as athletes, they deserved better. And see, unlike in individual sport where there is a qualification mark, either you achieve it or you don't. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen like that in a team sport. Yeah. And for us, our best bet is hockey at the end of the day in a team sport.
Right. So speaking of COVID and COVID-related issues, I'm sure for any athlete, break in practice is a big issue, right? And COVID has disrupted complete sporting world. So talk us through what sort of issues our athletes faced in last 1 year or so, because few might not be getting enough practice or enough time, like maybe issues with the pools and all. So talk us through the issues.
Starting March last year, I think the athletes have gone through the worst. A, uncertainty, especially those who are, say, at the twilight of their careers. 1 year of the Olympics being postponed put a spoke in their future plans. Are they going to be fit for those 12 months? Which means you are trying to prolong your career. That was one thing. The other thing was facilities. Whether it was the athletes, the hockey players, the table tennis players, for example, most of them didn't have anything. The worst hit, of course, were the swimmers. They didn't have a pool to swim in. In fact, even the day Srihari Natarajan qualified and came back to Bangalore, there was no certainty on whether he can train for the Olympics in Bangalore because our pools were shut. So it's only after the chief secretary intervened and they gave him a special exemption to swim. But then the exemption that came in that day said only the Olympic bound athletes and nobody else, Olympic bound swimmers, and nobody else gets access. So who does he compete against? You need a pacemaker. So in terms of a system, obviously they didn't have that in place. It's been very lonely for them as well. Most of them have been in camps, especially, for example, in the second wave, they were not even allowed to mingle amongst themselves. So you finish practice, you're doing it in smaller groups on most days, and then you're back. At a time when they took a break just after the first wave, combined, I think, about 14 of our Olympic-bound athletes, hockey players, for example, men and women, have tested positive, 14 to 18 of them. That itself is huge. You know, it takes a toll on you physically, mentally, because you don't know if you're going to you know, book your ticket to Tokyo. You don't know how your body is going to react to it. It's been a period of uncertainty, and I believe every athlete who goes to the Olympics, you know, he's gone through the grind and a champion class at that.
I'm sure you have been covering different sports for quite some time now, and 2012 has been, you know, our best Olympics, we have to say, in terms of number of medals at least. So do you think we'll have a chance this time to better it?
Not entirely sure. In badminton, for example, you know, our contingent size has obviously shrunk. Our shooters still have the best chance. I think we're going to, I don't know, I have a gut feeling that we're going to make a rapid stride in archery.
Okay.
I mean, because, you know, I think Deepika Kumari has a lot to prove. I mean, I wouldn't want any athlete to go out there to, you know, compete to prove their critics wrong. But having said that, you know, she's always kind of, you know, failed to meet expectations on the big stage. But I believe this Olympics is something that will belong to her. Our wrestlers, in that sense, yes, maybe if we don't better it, we may just match it. But watch out for the shooters, archers, and wrestlers.
Sure. Manuja, let's look at each sport one by one in terms of athletes qualified. So let me start with hockey. I think you've already touched a little bit about hockey. So hockey, yes, being one of the premier sports in India, it's one of the sought after sports. So historically, India has been very good at hockey. I mean, we've won many Olympic medals back in the day. So, in the past 2-3 years, India is doing well in terms of hockey at the Asian level. So what do you think are India's chances this time?
I feel they're going obviously short on match practice. A semi-finals finish for the men, I think, will be great. It's like once in 4 years, we actually expect them to work miracles. Otherwise, we really don't, really tell them, they're champions or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They are short on match practice, and we can't deny that. And remember, although they say they've all recovered, at least 10 players in that team have, had a bout of COVID. And one of them, the defender, Surinder. Surinder had a serious case of COVID. He was admitted. So in that sense, they were very fit as a team. But how fit are they going into the Olympics is a little debatable. Only not because of lack of effort, but the prevailing circumstances. But I would want to see the women's team surprise us. Because it's a young team, and I feel it's one of the most balanced teams ever picked in Indian hockey. You have a fair amount of seniors. Rani is very, very motivating as a captain. Them, I actually give them a chance, and we have to be fair to them. It's only the third time they'll be going into the Olympics as a team. Men, if you get lucky, you'll probably see a medal. But having said that, will they go and win a medal? They can, but a semi-finals finish, I will think is good enough.
Right,
or
right.
I would say, because you should also factor in the pool that they are in. They are in a competitive pool. You have Australia, Argentina, Japan themselves. Japan has been working very hard. They have a great coach. They have Salman Akbar from Pakistan as their goalkeeping consultant. So that's an added advantage, and the home comfort. It is a tough pool. Australia, Argentina, New Zealand, Spain, Japan. I think, yeah, that's what is pool A for us. So, yeah, a quarterfinals is what I would expect.
Great, great. Do you think these are good signs for Indian hockey, because the women's team also qualifying, since 2016 back-to-back. So, great signs there, right, for hockey, especially women's team making it.
No, absolutely. Yep. I think, it actually, for any sport to succeed at any level, you need champions. The example for that will always be Sindhu and Saina. For me, it started with Aparna Popat in badminton. So you need those stars. And that way, this Indian women's hockey team has gone out there. I've covered some of their matches, especially I was there when they qualified for the Olympics at Bhuneshwar. And I remember the kind of girls who came there to watch the match at the Kalinga Stadium. You had this entire bunch of girls from schools who had come there. They were cheering. So obviously, if it's their success touches the grassroots level, it's going to go a long way in building women's hockey, because at one point of time, women's hockey was kind of, completely on the downslide. Even now, it's in pockets. For example, in Karnataka, women's hockey is dead. Pockets of Tamil Nadu, where we did well once upon a time. Down south, it's really non-existent now. It's Punjab, Haryana, and the Northeast. So success at the Olympics would mean that there would be more people willing to take up the sport.
Just before we move on from hockey, I also had a point, if I may add. I just saw that a few days back, the list of flag bearers for the Indian contingent just came out, and the Indian hockey captain, I think Manpreet Singh, in the men's team, he's yes. one of the flag bearers, right?
Yes,
and
yes.
I think this is the first time since the 96 Olympics that a hockey player has been a flag bearer. And that was Pargat Singh, and both of them, incidentally, Pargat Singh and even Manpreet Singh, both hail from mm-hmm. the same village.
That's
in
true.
Punjab. Yeah, that's, I thought that was very interesting.
Oh, yes. Although I would say, you know, when it comes to a flag bearer, no offense meant to anybody who's bearing the flag. But yeah, I would love to have seen Sindhu and Rani, you know, being flag bearers, closing yeah, ceremony, yeah. opening ceremony. But I understand there are only that many athletes who can be flag bearers. But yeah, a medalist in the previous event, like how Bajrang Punya for the closing ceremony, mm. would have augured well. But then again, no offense to either Mary or Manpreet on that count.
A lot of interesting stories and great insights. So let's turn our attention to athletics now. So close to 26 athletes have qualified. So Manoj, what is your take on the best chances? Who can we bet medals on? And I think there'll be a lot of focus on players like Neeraj Chopra, Dute Chand, right? What is your take on that?
I'm not very, very convinced about how Dute Chand will do, because she's cut it too fine. And also, I think somewhere, we have to understand one thing about athletics here. Our athletes are completely short of any kind of practice. Their qualification has been very late. If there is an athlete I'll put my money on to do well, will be Neeraj Chopra, yes. Beyond that, I don't see athletics really being there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, okay.
Not in track and field.
All right. Okay, let's then now move on to shooting. So shooting has been, has given us a big haul in terms of medals in the past. So unfortunately, we couldn't win any medals in 2016 Olympics. So this time we have very good players like Saurabh Chaudhary, Rahees Sarnobhat, and Manu Bhakar. They're in great form right now. So what can we expect from them this time?
I think in terms of shooting, we have one of the best squads going. They've had some good match, some tournament practice as well. They've gone into the mm-hmm. World Cup. Abhishek Verma in 10 meters air pistol. He's somebody I've always thought, has very good chances, very focused. The girls are doing very well.
Right.
And as always, mm-hmm. Starting, I think, 2004, when Rathore won that medal, somehow each time he set the bar for shooting in, India. So, from there to Bindra, and then, you've had Gagan and so many others doing well. Somewhere you feel that, they carry the hope of medals for us. And, if you even look at the way they have qualified, there's been a process for them in place, and they also have very good coaches. I mean, somebody like Suma Shirur, for example, is very heavily invested in them. The difference between shooting and other sport is their own athletes have been very invested in it. Whether it's a Bindra right. who's helped out, you have Gagan Narang, right. Who's there. So, in terms of who the athletes who are contributing to the sport reflects on where the sport has gone. And you have Elvina in this thing. She's the debutant, but a great prospect in 100 meters air rifle. And when they have somebody right. like Rajput and Sawant in the mix, they'll obviously feed on the experience of the seniors.
So let's go on to other sports now. What do you think are India's chances are in boxing this term around? Because I think we put up a good contingent with Amit Pangal, Mary Kom, and Vikas Yadav being one of the stalwarts. And it's also going in with four women boxers this time around. So your take on that?
I think we have a fantastic group of guys who are going. Very heartening to see somebody like, Simranjeet, Lovlina, like you said, four girls, Pooja Rani, women who've done very well on the Asian circuit, in junior meets, their graduation into the senior category has been very good. There are a lot of first timers. The mix of youth and experience plays my bet on Amit Pangal and Vikas Krishnan. I mean, both of them have, you know, been very consistent as boxers. Mary Kom, of course. I mean, you know, you can never write off Mary Kom. I mean, that woman and the inspiring story that she is by herself, a mother of three, going in for her another shot at the Olympics with the, you know, six world championship medals to her credit. So
absolutely.
I feel it's very exciting, especially to see women boxers doing so well.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned Mary Kom also, I was going through the list of qualified athletes, and out of the 120 odd, I see that we have around 8 Khel Ratna awardees in this particular contingent, out of which 7 are women. So I think it's not just that the athlete's strength is, the contingent strength is, it's almost as if the athletes are also at the peak of their prowess. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, see, one thing about Indian women and Olympics, I'll tell you, age has not been a barrier for them.
Right.
I mean, you had Maleshwari who went on to win a medal for us. So in terms of age, they've always been very age-defying, whether you take Commonwealth, Asian Games, you know, the kind of experience they go with. Why I say, you know, they will do well, or, you know, you can expect a medal from them is, despite all the pandemic circumstances, last month they won, 15 medals at the Asian Boxing Championship in Dubai. So they're going in with good match practice. And somebody like Lovina or a Pooja Rani, or even for that matter, Simranjeet, they've come up from the junior ranks. So, you know, they've been through so much of grind. I think they are ready for the big stage. And when you say 7 Khel Ratnas, yeah. I mean, in India, especially when it comes to individual sport, yes, shooters are there, but it's always the women who excelled.
Absolutely, no doubt about that.
Women athletes, I mean, you've had Sindhu, Mary Kom, Saina, Sanya, all of them putting us on the map.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of Khel Ratna awardee, we have another Khel Ratna awardee, and we're actually two, Bajrang Punia and Vinesh Phogat, who are representing the wrestling contingent. So let's talk about wrestling. What do you feel are the chances this time around? Because this has also become a strong point for us in the recent past.
Yes, I'll obviously put my money on Bajrang. I mean, he goes in with a lot of experience. I mean, they definitely are our medal prospects. In terms of who, yes, I mean, you know, okay, there's a lot of focus on Bajrang. But you'll also have to look at Ravi Dahiya and Deepak Punia as well.
Mm-hmm.
These are names which, you know, generally fly under the radar, but have been consistent. Amongst women, again, Vinesh Phogat is your biggest name. Watch out for Sonam Malik in the 62 kilo category. She's somebody you really need to watch out for. Likewise for Anshul Malik. I think Anshul is 57 kilos. I mean, these are young girls with big hearts. It's not I'm not focusing only on women wrestlers, but you know, these are girls who've really shown that, you know, the lion-hearted attitude on the mat. So yeah, it's you know, Indian wrestling for us this time is beyond Bajrang Punia and Vinesh Phogat. I look at 2-3 medals there. Yeah,
let's hope that comes.
I'm sticking my neck out for them.
Let's hope that comes to it. So moving on to other sports, badminton this time around, we don't have that. We were sending in a contingent of 4, including Sai Praneeth, Sindhu, and Chirag, and Ritik Sairaj, right? So what do you think are India's chances in badminton this time going around?
It's very unfortunate that the others couldn't make it. See, that's what I was talking about, leaving your qualification too late. Who knew pandemic would take away so many tournaments that, you know, somebody like, say, Saina couldn't qualify.
Right.
For me, I think a medal, I see only Sindhu as a medal prospect. Because also we have to factor in that Sai Praneeth also has a very tricky draw. Okay, because when you look at the draw he is in, he has to, you know, get past athletes from Israel, Netherlands. Mm-hmm. But he runs into the bigger ones as he goes into the later rounds. Like, I think if all things go well for him and he reaches the round of 16, he's up against Long Agnes. And if he goes to the quarters, he comes up and I think Kento Momata. I think that Momata is the one he'll face in the quarters if both of them kind of qualify. So for him, the path to a medal is very dicey. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it is dicey because also remember he's seeded, I think, 13th.
Right.
But the most difficult in terms of draw is for Satvik and Chirag. I mean, they have the first people they have to worry about is the world number one, the Indonesian pair. And you know, you have the Chinese Taipei guys in their way. So, you know, it's luck of draw and putting for Satvik and Chirag. I think that just hasn't worked.
Let's hope they spring a surprise because I think...
absolutely hope they do.
Moving on to tennis. Tennis, I think the qualification, I was refreshing literally the Wikipedia page every other day just to see if someone has qualified. But finally, Sania Mirza has made her way through into the draw and she's taking along with her Ankita Raina. That's right. going to be a tough time, tough going probably, but chances on tennis, and also is AITA missing a trick, and because this is a medal winning sport and we're not seeing a lot of traction in terms of tennis in at least in this last 4 or 5 years. Your take on that, please.
I don't think AITA has ever been so focused on Olympics as such. I mean, just look at the way our draw is. I mean, you have just one doubles team. And remember, say until 4 years, 8 years ago, people were actually fighting on who pairs up with whom. Also that lack of clarity. I mean, really, I mean, look at where somebody like Dwitsaran and Rohan Bopanna, you know, two season players stand. They don't even know if they're going to make the cut. It's like, Rohan, in an interview in Wimbledon, I think yesterday, day before, said there is absolutely no clarity. He said, nobody knows. He said, I've been asking around for the past week because the ITF itself has not released the official cut. Okay, some say, you know, combined ranking of the last team is 204. Who makes it? Who doesn't make it? And then they're saying, you know, there has to be withdrawal. Do you blame AITA for it? We really haven't had them focusing on Olympics at all. But do I give Sanya and Ankita a chance? I do. I mean, at least to go the distance.
No, that's good. Absolutely, absolutely.
Because, you know, it's also just not about history. No? The little history that tennis will anyway have is, I think, Sanya will be the first female athlete to represent India at 4 Olympics.
Yeah. And
I think, the takeaway for us.
And speaking as a Hyderabadi, I hope Sanya does even better. Sanya and Sindhu, both of them actually, in fact. So
I'll go with you on that. I'll go with you on that for a simple reason. I think Telangana is very heavily invested in sport, and I really appreciate that about the state.
That's true. So moving on to table tennis, we have had the superstar that Manika Batra has become in the last 3-4 years. And in the contingent is also the veteran Sharad Kamal. So do you think table tennis is looking like a prospect at least this time around? What do you take on that?
To be very honest, I'm very excited for table tennis.
That's wonderful.
Manika Batra, yes. I mean, the brightest young kid to have come out. Lots of spunk. A great game to go with it. An attacking player, you know, who plays that very fearless brand of table tennis. But I'm also very excited for Sharad Kamal and Satyan. Because, you know, these are two players, table tennis players, who I feel have been the flag bearers of table tennis for so long for us. I mean, for me, when I look at them, you know, they've been there, done that, whether it's Commonwealth, whether it's Asian Games. It's not about the medals, but it's the spirit with which they've gone out there and played. And they're also very humble athletes. So, and, you know, very giving athletes in terms of helping others train. Manika, I mean, she's the girl who broke the glass ceiling for us in table tennis. So always very excited to see her watch. And I think this is her games to shine.
Wonderful. And moving on to, since you already touched upon archery a little bit, we have Atanu Das, who's a veteran, and also Deepika Kumari. As you said, she's got a lot to, you know, to prove. So anything you would like to extend upon that, what you've already said?
What I would like to see them is, one, I'm very disappointed. It is disappointing the women's team failed to qualify.
Mm-hmm.
But can they do well? I think they can. You know, apart from, you know, all the focuses on the couple, I would see Abhishek Verma doing well. He's somebody who has, you know, over a period of time done well for India. And I see it's his, you know, stage to go out there and do well. But yes, Antanu Das needs to be there. Because even if you look at the mixed team event that we have, you need somebody to balance out, anchor somebody like Komalika or Ankita Bhagat. So that's where Antanu Das plays a huge role. And like, the pressure is on Deepika to, you know, prove that she is a big stage athlete.
And I also wanted to ask you about another medal-winning sport, which is seemingly struggling right now in terms of weightlifting. We've had Karna Malleshwari literally, you know, do wonders for that sport, as well as especially women's sport in general. And even in that, this particular time, we've only been able to send a solitary athlete in terms of Mirabai Chanu. A great athlete, great athlete, no doubt. But do you think there is a scope here, that something that we are missing out on?
See, the problem with the weightlifting has been the administrative bungling, and of course, doping. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are things which, you know, you could never get rid of in weightlifting, as a result of which the sport has suffered so much. Mirabai Chanu, what she will do there, I'm not entirely sure. She's had a good ranking in this thing. If I'm not wrong, she was placed second or third. I'm not entirely sure, but she was within the top five of the international weightlifting rankings last month. So that gives you some hope in terms of where she stands. But remember, she's also qualified on the world quota. Yeah. So it could be, you know, we push the envelope in terms of weightlifting. But yeah, it's anybody's guess where weightlifting goes in India, any which ways.
Right. And a few heartening smaller stories that we might miss out on is that India is sending a fencer for the first time. That a female fencer at that, Bhavani Devi. And we mm-hmm. also had an equestrian who's qualified for the first time in two decades in Fawad Mirza. And as you've already profiled, we've had a couple of swimmers breach the A qualification mark. Word on mm-hmm. these sort of unsung heroes, as you can, if you may call it.
I think it is, for me, the four of them that you mentioned are the story of the Olympics for India. Bhavani, the kind of effort her family has put in to, you know, where she is today. And you know, for you to stay invested even at 27 in a sport which has such few takers, you know, when you set out to be a path breaker, it's not every day that you'll get somebody to, you know, encourage you or push you. And of course, Bhavani's got a lot of support from Go Sports. And, you know, to even think that, you know, a woman fencer is ranked within the top 50 in the world, that itself is a huge thing for us. I mean, for her to go out there when she went for the, I think she finished quarterfinalist in the Fencing World Cup. She's done amazing work. And, you know, this is what you call determination. It's not that she hadn't tried before. Rio was a heartbreak for her. She came very close to qualifying. She learned from there, you know. She put a lot of pressure on herself. You know, she just crumbled under pressure. 5 years you know, down the line, she's kind of achieved what she wants to do, at least in terms of representing. She's a great story. Fuad, for me, is one of my favorite stories because I've seen Fuad from the time he was 10, 11. His father is a vet. So he's seen horses all around. This is a boy who's quietly been working away from the entire limelight, the focus that is there on Olympics. I think till 2018, half of India didn't know who Fawad Mirza is. At least a half of India now which knows who Fawad Mirza is. People didn't know who he was. A very quiet guy who's gone about his business. Of course, see, again, this is what private funding can do for you. Fawad is a great example. He's sponsored by the Embassy International Riding School, the Embassy Group, basically, the real estate guys. The thing in India with the equestrian is it was always seen as a sport for the armed forces. A civilian taking up equestrian was always beyond anybody's imagination. So a lot of people, I don't know if you're aware, but Chennai, Pune, Bangalore, Ooty, these small Bhopal, these pockets have a lot of equestrian riders. Mm. What Fawad has done to the sport is he has given them hope that you can go out there and represent India even if you are a civilian. The two medals that he won, silver he won at the Asian Games, was game-changing for us. He's lived away from home for almost 3 years now. And see, these are journeys which are not often spoken about. He lives in Germany. There you don't have people picking up things after you. Whether it is looking after your horse, feeding it, exercising it, you go through the grind by yourself. Even, you know, probably you help even transporting your horses. So, you know, these are people who are like, you know, see, both Fuad and Bhavani, both of them are 27, 28, which is seen as a little older age in the sport that they pursue. But for them to go out there and prove that, you know, age is not a barrier, circumstances are not barriers. Fuad has had a huge thing from 2018, I think after he went from the Asian Games, he's hardly been home. He hasn't seen his family. Living alone, and believe me, in those cold conditions of Germany, he lives in a small village, which barely has, I think, 50 people, if I'm not wrong. These are journeys which are fascinating. Sajan, again, incidentally, and Sajan Prakash, another 27-year-old, who until October last year could barely swim because of a slip disc in the neck that he had, and then he couldn't swim after that. To go out there and get an A qualifying mark, and remember, the beauty of both Srihari and Sajan qualifying, their coaches are Indians. You have Nihar Amin and Pradeep Kumar, who worked for a better part of his career. Sajan swam India, and so has Srihari. Bangalore, I mean, they both were based out of Bangalore for the longest of time. But it augurs well. These are heights where India had not reached. Every time we went to the Olympics, okay, we have a universality quota. One male athlete or one male athlete, one female athlete will get it. They will go. So the idea was to get to the B qualifying mark, which I think a lot of our swimmers over a period of time, Rehan Poncha, Veer Dhawal, all of them achieved, Sandeep Sejwal achieved it. But an A qualifying mark, like both Sajan and Srihari, said, instills belief. And I think, especially in this time where, you know, I know a time when some of these boys even swam in ponds because swimming pools were shut. The journey itself to Tokyo for them, I think, is an achievement by itself.
These are such inspiring stories, Manuja. Thank you so much for sharing them, because we probably might just read the headlines, or if we are interested, we might dig in a little deeper. Mm-hmm. But knowing these stories at a personal level and just bringing them out, these are just wonderful. And such a heartwarming thing to see that just how personal drive and ambition can take people so many places. Wonderful to note.
Yeah.
And finally, because we have four mechanical engineers here, I just want to tell that We have a sailing a person called Netra Kumanan who qualified for the Olympics. She's a sailor who's passed out of mechanical engineering in SRM University, Chennai. So
what is also... SRM and sport? Please tell me. Please tell me that. What is with SRM and sport?
No, I think we have the three of us we studied in Tamil Nadu, and definitely there is a kind of a culture, and because we have seen people from SRM come and compete in our universities, and they're always at a level above, whether it be in any, like, not your like your high profile games like cricket or even like football, basketball, but even the smaller like maybe the athletics wings also. I think first to do is it with I think they have a great facility there in terms of infrastructure. I think they've built up a character of encouraging sports and you know, that not clashing with the academics, especially at an engineering college. That's also a very rare thing to see, because with the number of subjects and a lot of colleges having mandatory attendances, it becomes a little complicated.
So I was just talking about you know, the sailing and its love affair with Chennai port, especially going into Tokyo Games. I mean, three of them are from Chennai: Netra, Ganapati, Varun. I think Vishnu is from Mumbai. So, I mean, Netra, huge, again, achievement. See, whatever people say, you know, qualifying is not an achievement. I don't believe in that. Because to qualify, there are people who spend a lifetime. So that way, Netra's qualification, becoming the first woman Indian sailor to qualify for the Olympics, I think that was great. And, you know, I really like what she said when she was training in Hungary. She said, being the first woman wasn't my goal. She said, it's something I could have done. But that whole idea of saying, I want to go there and achieve and not participate, I think that's a great you know, sign for Indian sport. I don't know where this team will go, but pathbreaking. They're young. I think the average age of Varun, Vishnu, Ganapati and Netra is, I think, about 23, 24. I think this is a team which can be built going into the 2024 Olympics.
That's brilliant.
Thank you, Manoja. I think you have talked us through so many sports and all. But after all, we are a cricket podcast and cricket fan in ours. You know, it's not going to let you leave today without speaking about cricket. So, Ram, why don't you take us?
Yeah. Before starting with cricket, Manoj, I just wanted to know, how come Haryana and Punjab, you know, seem to throw a plethora of athletes, whereas in South India, we struggle to put up athletes at that rate? And what are we doing wrong and what they are doing right? I just wanted to know your perspective
on system at the grassroots level. If you look at, say, the Indian women's hockey team, I think five of them come from the same academy in Haryana. See, for them, sport is ingrained. And also, our focus is academics, theirs is not. The difference between the North and the South is, for us, academics is a mean of survival. For them, a job. So if academics is not what gets them, sport gets them a job. See, a lot of them, their idea of going out and playing sport is, if you go out, you know, represent, say, in the state or the national level, you'll get a railways job or you'll get a Punjab police job. So in terms of socio-economic security is what it provides. Unlike us, our system of sport is not developed. See, a system of sport is not developed in the sense, we are more elitist in South, being very honest. We have badminton, we have table tennis. Okay, I'm leaving cricket out of this since we're talking Olympic sport. We have swimming. We don't have team sport. And also, why do so many of them from North India come into team sport? It's cheaper. What do you need to play hockey? You need one stick. What do you need to for athletics? You need a good pair of spikes. In terms of, and also look at the incentives that these governments give. For example, was it day before? Odisha government announced cash prize. 6, 4, 2 crores each for gold, silver, bronze. And I think 10 or 15 lakhs, I'm not very sure, for a participant. Karnataka government, I don't even think, is aware of who's going. We have three people from Karnataka going for the Olympics. 2016, in the hockey team alone, we had four. So that just shows what the system does to sport. Clearly, in the states where the representation is poor, it's a reflection of the system that prevails. I mean, look at Haryana. A former India hockey player is their sports minister, Sandeep Singh. Okay, just look at it geographically. Northeast is sending more athletes to the Olympics than South.
Yeah.
That explains a system.
Yeah, Manoj, and moving at talking about cricket, we are all happy that the BCCI has announced the, you know, itinerary for the domestic cricket. So talk us about your journey covering domestic cricket across India all these years.
I started covering domestic cricket actually pretty late, be very honest. I think I've covered domestic cricket. I've been in the profession for 18 years, but I've covered domestic cricket last 8-9 years. Because it so happened when I started off, there were way too many cricket reporters around. So I did very little cricket, and they were very happy to have a woman do feature stories. So when a lot of the others went to cover domestic cricket, I covered a lot of these feature stories during international match, or, you know, do these interviews, those kind of things. So it wasn't until there was a need for a reporter. To be honest, I still remember the only reason why I started getting domestic matches is because there was nobody else in a department to cover cricket. All the cricket reporters had left in Deccan Chronicle. So that's when I actually got my chance to start covering. I think for me, that's been a fantastic journey. I've learned life's lessons in covering domestic cricket because it's not easy. Again, I'll say this, for a woman, it's that much more difficult to cover, because you don't have too many women covering domestic cricket in India. Of course, you do have quite a few of them doing it now, but that's, I think, the last couple of years. I have, to be honest, barring Bangalore, I haven't covered a domestic match with another woman anywhere else. No, I've covered in Delhi with Uttara Ganeshan, yes. Yeah, apart from that, anywhere else, no, I haven't covered domestic cricket with another woman. For any journalist to understand cricket and how it works, domestic cricket is your nursery. I won't even say domestic cricket. Your investment starts at the under 14, under 16 level. For example, when I started my career in 2003, we were sent for the Cottonian Shield, the BTR Shield, the local leagues. I always wondered, why am I doing this? But okay, it was an assignment. I went there. When I look back, the players I covered then are the players I continue to cover. The under 14, under 16, under 13 also, in fact, stories that we have written are stories of Shreyas Gopals and the Karun Nayars and the R. Samath. In fact, the other day, found one cutting of Shreyas' interview when he was named the under 13 captain of the Karnataka team.
Yeah, I think the Karuns and other guys played under Shreyas for Karnataka under 13, I guess, under 13, under 16.
Yes, yes.
Shreyas was the captain, I believe.
Captain, yeah. Yes. So, you know, I've seen Samarth and David Mathias open for, Mayank and David Mathias open for Bishop Cottons. For me, whether it's league cricket or domestic cricket, it kind of lays the foundation. It's a great teacher. It's where you learn, especially when there is no television coverage, you tend to concentrate that much more. And thanks to the prevailing circumstances, the last few years, hardly any matches are anyway televised. So ask me to cover an IPL or a Ranji Trophy match, I'll cover an entire season of Ranji Trophy without complaining. Don't give me IPL, I'm fine with it. I live without covering IPL.
That's great, Manoja, because off late, because of the advent of social media, there's a lot of interest in domestic cricket. And you could see that a lot of tweets and a lot of posts about domestic cricket, which is really a heartening thing to see, isn't it?
No, absolutely. I mean, especially when I see now domestic cricket, I think social media has played a huge role in popularizing domestic cricket in the absence of live coverage. Especially when you cover in places like, say, Jammu or Karnail Singh Stadium in Delhi or Mohali, where there's no live coverage, we do get a lot of requests asking for scores. So there is a genuine interest, but then again, it's in pockets. I don't know if people in Delhi are ever interested in knowing what their Ranji Trophy team is doing. But down south, I think our domestic culture, cricket culture, is so strong that you do have a lot of people who are interested in it. And Karnataka Ranji does a fabulous job of, you know, keeping people posted. So you have to invest in generating that interest. So if you're not, you know, getting people interested in domestic cricket, nobody is going to be interested either. So, but yeah, social media plays a huge role.
Now, after the IPL's advent, don't you think that there is kind of like, you know, people go easy with the domestic cricket, especially the players I'm talking about? Do you see there's some lack of interest in players who, you know, play the IPL to come back and perform, you know, literally with no crowd and, you know, not substandard facilities, I can call them. So have you noticed anyone, I mean, in general, I'm talking about players, you know, not having that interest to play at the domestic level?
I think so. See, what IPL did to players was, it gave, see, domestic cricket earlier was your stepping stone into the international team. But with IPL, it gave you a quicker route to get there. How many in Tamil Nadu knew who Varun Chakravarti was? But it also has its flip sides. In terms of, if you look at the players who've come out of the system, it's always the hard grind which gets them in terms of being sustainable. That's a story which people have to remember more than the IPL success stories. We've all seen the career journeys of, say, Mayank Agarwal. I'm talking about the recent players, KL Rahul. Devdutt Padikkal had a great domestic season before now he's picked for the India team for Sri Lanka. Somehow I feel over a period of time, this fixation of getting an IPL contract, that's where the entire focus of some players, I'm not saying all players, I know a lot of players who play for their state. It's not for their place in IPL or a franchise or franchisee cricket. I think also there's some point of time, especially on youngsters, the scouts hanging around these tournaments, it kind of adds pressure on them. But yeah, at some level, being a diehard domestic cricket fan, I always feel that, you know, IPL somewhere took away some sheen, some charm. I mean, look at even the order of the domestic calendar now. We play Mushtaq Ali. I mean, where is the Dilip Trophy? Where is the other trophy? Where is your Irani Trophy? Sorry, Irani Cup. Somewhere it's diluted it. But I always want people to believe that domestic cricket is what gets you recognition. But then, who am I to say? Past precedents have shown that you can get into the Indian team without even featuring regularly in the playing 11 of your state team. I mean, I know the Chennai boys there, but sorry, Chennai boys, a lot of them have taken the easy IPL route into the Indian team.
Yeah, on this note, I just wanted to add one funny thing which I noticed recently. There were talks about Devdutt Padikkal being included, you know, into the Indian squad for the England tour. So, I mean, a lot of people were excited, but I was thinking he hasn't got a first-class 100. See, that's the way, once you perform at the IPL, people think that you're good enough to play at any level. I mean, taking nothing away from Devdutt, he's a wonderful talent, but he is yet to get a first-class 100, and here people want him to get into the test team without that. Yeah. So, that's the way the thing has changed with the IPL, I believe.
Yeah. His love affair with the 90s goes on, I think.
Yeah.
He has a 99 also, no?
Yeah, yeah, it's a 99 also, yeah.
Mysore. I can't remember which team that was, yeah. It was, yeah, he does have a 99 and yeah, he hasn't got there. But yeah, see, that's how it is, no? Our recognition of players, when I say our, I'm talking about the general population, is with IPL. Okay, I'll give you an example of, you know, where we lose out on in terms of talent. What happened to KC Kariappa? Overnight success, and we've had lots of people like this. Overnight success, Karorpati, from, you know, the rags to riches story, where does he go? You don't blame the player. I don't blame the player as much as I blame the system. What do you do with players? How do you mold them? Somebody like Siraj. Siraj, yes, you know, he got the big bucks in IPL, but he's also performed at the domestic level to be where he is. But again, I think the pandemic also, you know, gave some easy routes to players to earn their India stripes. Somewhere I feel, you know, some of them earn it too early, thanks to IPL, yeah.
Linking cricket and you know, what we had a conversation about, all of the Olympics. So we were just, I was just going through the preparation for this. I saw that golf, right? Golf has been in the Olympics this time around and 2016, and then way back in 1904. And baseball is here, softball is here. What do you think is the reason that cricket is still averse to getting into the Olympics? It's something that has confused all of us. When we can push the sport to a global level and wider reach, why are the people in charge hesitant?
See, the only time I think cricket was played was, I think, 100 years ago.
Yeah, 1900.
Correct,
exactly 1900.
You know, 1900, that was because there wasn't money involved. But I believe, you know, cricket works on economics, and Olympics is not economically viable for the sport. I'm not saying it should not be played. Great if cricket is played. But even if you look at something like the Commonwealth Games has been pitching for, you know, cricket forever. But why will it not come? One, your FTPs are planned in such a way that it's packed. So for you to cull out that, you know, 3 weeks window or a 2 weeks window for Olympics, you can do it. But are you getting a broadcast rights there? No. Are you getting commercials involved there? No. So what is it that they benefit? Because over a period of time, cricket has become commercially driven, economically driven. So when commercials and economics don't appeal, and then however big the event is, I don't think it appeals to the people who run the sport. Otherwise, I don't see one good reason why you can't have, cricket at the Olympics. It just doesn't add up for them in terms of economics and also planning.
Thank you very much, Manoja, for joining with us and sharing, you know, so many insights. And I'm not sure whether we can get a better guest than you covering different aspects and different games altogether. And thank you very much again for your time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It was great talking to you guys. Yeah. I don't know if I spoke too much. Huh?
No. I think you have enlightened all of us, actually, because few of us know about few sports, few we don't know. There is, you know, I mean, we are not complete about it, all the sports. So it's great, great insights from you. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will enjoy listening to you.
The thing, I think that's the advantage of being a journalist from South India. I'm being very honest, because the kind of exposure we have to sport in South India, no, you don't have it anywhere else, because of the fact that, say, you guys are from Tamil Nadu, you'll know the sporting culture. We cover local volleyball with the same interest we cover local basketball, cricket. I mean, I know Chennai, you all carry half page of local volleyball leagues. True, so it kind of gives you a cultural background in sport, which probably North India doesn't have. I mean, I know for a fact, if you even go for a Ranji Trophy match up north, you won't find two reporters from there. They'll come at lunch. And it's always us from south who'll be there. And even if you look at, say, some place like Punjab, they actually call the association. Bhai, score kya hua? Kaun aa raha hai sham ko interview ke liye? Aa jaye kya 4 baje? Chai mein kya ban raha hai? These are the questions that they ask. For them, it's like time pass. Okay, let's go, have a look at what they're doing and come back. I think it culturally, that's what it does to us. I think I'm a, first of all, I'm a Kannada fanatic. On top of that, I'm a South Indian, diehard South Indian. So yeah, sport, I think that way teaches us in South much more than what it teaches you anywhere else. And also, you know, it's our educational background, no?
Yeah.
We also read. I think that's what makes us very different from people. I don't know if you guys agree, but yeah, I always believe it's our reading culture also that takes us some places.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
It's our pleasure, Manoja.
And thank you, Ram, for joining with us today and accompanying us and making
thanks,
it
Ram.
More
thank
wonderful.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Pleasure. He's the driving force, huh?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. He's a big brother watching all of us from, darker background.
Yeah. That I agree.
That's all for the episode, guys. Thanks for tuning in and stay tuned for more such interesting episodes. Stay safe, stay healthy. Bye-bye.